It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, off and running, a brand new month on the horn and a brand new week. The first week is April. It's the second day of April, 2018. This is the horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, at least until HeadOnRadioNetwork.com gets rebuilt and unhacked and all the other nasty things that happen to it. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, we do. We begin a new broadcast month, and the first thing we have to do is, what do we do every evening? Time to thank the sponsors. You know, the contributors. Y'all, who keep the program on the air. So thanks very kindly going out to Clarence in Philly. And thanks very kindly to Paul in Arizona. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly to Elizabeth in New York. And thanks as well to Albert in North Carolina. Those are the subscribers for the second day of the month. For the first day of the month, and this is where some of that calendar fun comes in. Some people got their subscriptions that happened on the 29th moved back to the 28th. Others got their subscriptions moved on to the first. So we have thanks to send out this in particular from the first day of the month to Vernon in California, and to our good friend and correspondent from the frozen wastes of the far Rocky Mountain Canadian North, Lauren. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for helping keep the program on the air. Thank you very kindly to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. And thanks very kindly to Peter in Texas. Thank you, Peter, for being part of the merry little band that keeps all of this hopping. Thanks to Brock. Thank you very kindly, Brock. And thank you very kindly to Joseph in Washington. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you very much indeed to our buddies at Home Dirts. Thank you very kindly to Kay in California. And thank you very kindly to Smitty down Florida way. Thank you very, very much indeed. Now, this being the beginning of the month, we didn't have a program on the 1st of April because it was busy being Sunday and Easter and April Fools all at one time. April 1st was busy this year. So that means that this evening marks Shirley's Memorial Challenge, courtesy of our buddy Laborman and an anonymous contributor and our dear friend Ralphs, who combine to create Shirley's Challenge so that that goes on in memory of its originator. Our good friend Bruce. And so there is a $200 challenge on the table this evening. And if it is responded to in kind, then your $200 get doubled as a result of the challenge. Okay? So Shirley's challenge is on the table, when we'll try to raise $400 this evening, which that would do. Because that's kind of what we need to do for the rest of the week. This is the program note portion of the evening. And that is that, remember, this week, the programs today through Thursday, the programs are only 2 hours. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, only 2 hours. And that's because between 8 and 9 p.m., I'm resetting everything so that I can send the program to Progressive Voices when I cover for Mike Malloy tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. So each of the two programs is 2 hours with an hour in between. I hope you'll join in. I hope you'll listen to both programs. I try not to replicate the information between the two, just to keep it all nice and fresh. So that's what this week is going to look like. But we have to do, as far as fundraising is concerned, we have to do $400 a night for this week. Because the next week I'm gone to D.C. And so we won't be able to do any fundraising next week because there won't be any programs on the air. So in essence, that's kind of the challenge of the week, is to raise $400 a night so that next week when I'm gone Monday through Thursday, hopefully home in time for a Friday on the Front Porch on Friday, a week from Friday, which would be the 14th, I think. We'll have a broadcast and not have a completely blank week. I'm looking at with trepidation at wondering what's going to happen while I'm gone this time, because lots of things seem to happen every time I disappear, and it's usually to D.C. We're going up to do some more work related to Appalachian health and the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. The struggle continues, even if it seems like very few are participating in the struggle anymore. But now with the science that we have in hand, it's also worth noting that the toxic genie has gotten out of the box or bottle in Appalachia and is affecting other parts of the country as well, so the work becomes even more important. So it's a tall order. I know it is. It's a very tall order. But we need to raise $400 a night for the week. And God, I hope we can. Thanks to Renee. Thank you, Renee, very kindly for getting us started this evening. That means we've got only $190 to go to meet Shirley's challenge. Which, like I said, you know, I hope we do. It is, of course, okay, so, yeah, if you want to help out and you never have before and you don't know how, go to headon.live and click on the PayPal link, and that'll take you to PayPal, and you can do that. Or you can participate in the Patreon campaign for people who despise PayPal. You can use the Patreon campaign, and that will carry you that'll come out the first day of every month at whatever rate you choose. And, you know, no kidding, this program is not for sale. We don't sell ads to anybody, and we don't don't do anything that, in terms of making this a capitalist enterprise. We exist because you want the program to exist. And we've got, the community is not tiny, but a far greater number of people listen to the program than actually contribute to keep it on the air. So it would be great to have new subscribers at Patreon and at PayPal. And for this evening, of course, it'd be great to round up another $190 so that we can meet Shirley's challenge and be that much closer to meeting the fundraising goals for the month, because to take a week's beating would be pretty brutal. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this being Moran Monday, the question then obtains, how about all them Morans? Because there's a bunch of them. Unrest and unease understandably continues in Sacramento County, California, where the community continues to be nonplussed by what passes for an explanation for the shooting death of Stephon Clark, a 22-year-old man who had his back turned to the police when they fired 20 rounds at him and hit him with 8. People have been Bill with a little sky and calendar watching going on. Since Easter was the first Sunday, the second Friday will be Friday the 13th, and we just had a blue moon, the last one of those for a while. Yeah, I'll be traveling on Friday the 13th. Thanks for the reminder, Bill. Eesh. Not that I'm superstitious. Numbers don't scare me. Morans with guns, they scare me. Numbers, not so much. But anyway, back in Sacramento, people were demanding answers, continue to demand answers to a situation that seems anything but clear-cut. And so there have been marches taking place. Yes. And Saturday evening, this past, there was a vigil for Stephon Clark. And video that was shot of the march shows marchers going past and between a pair of Sacramento County Sheriff's Department vehicles. And one of the sheriff's deputies tells them to back away from his car. He does it over the loudspeaker. And as the cars depart, the second driver then guns the engine and knocks a woman to the ground with his cruiser. Wanda Cleveland was the woman who was run down. She was taken to a hospital by members of the fire department, treated for bruises to her head and her arm, and released. And interviewed, she said, "He never even stopped. It was a hit and run. If I did that, I'd be charged." Now, nobody was blocking the cars. Nobody was engaging in protest of the sheriff's cruisers. But the sheriff's deputy just ran over the woman and kept on going. And so now there's another issue to attend to attend what has already become a very tense situation and relationship. This is On the one hand, not surprising, and on the other, not helpful, because the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department has an already unhealthy relationship with the community of color in that area, in that county, with the actual sheriff of Sacramento County engaged in back-and-forth bickering with Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Apparently, how is this relevant? It isn't. But the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department complained that the vehicle had been egged with a statement that was released on Sunday. The SCSD said vandals in the crowd made scratches, dents, and shattered a rear window of a sheriff's vehicle. The release did not address why the vehicle that struck Cleveland didn't stop. And so far, the SCSD, as of this writing, has been loath to address it directly, the hit-and-run incident, that is. And you know what? Having an egg thrown at your car, there's nothing in the California Penal Code that says the sheriff's deputy gets to run over somebody if somebody throws an egg at his car. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, how not to make things better, courtesy of the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's lots of morality going around. And it will be curious to see, indeed curious, if any efforts are taken toward corrective action. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. No need to worry about traveling on the 13th unless you're a Templar. You aren't a Templar, are you? No, I got drummed out of the Templars, I'm afraid. Yeah. I was kind of busy during the 13th century anyway. 14th, maybe. Yeah, I think it was the 14th century. And somewhere along the way, somebody told me that that's myth anyway. Myth? Couple of stories out of the, EPA and, relatively speaking, globe-trotting first-class flyer, Scott Pruitt, EPA administrator. Mm-hmm. Turns out that he rented a room in a condo on Capitol Hill, scant, blocks from the Capitol itself. He rented a room in a condo. Okay, big deal. So what? And he got a bargain on it. $50 a night. Yeah. For one room in a two-bedroom condo. Overall, the EPA paid $6,100 for six months in 2017. Here's the thing, though. The condo is co-owned by the spouse of an energy industry lobbyist who, has business in front of the EPA. And by the way, it turns out Scott Pruitt's daughter was in the other bedroom, renting the other bedroom in the apartment, because she spent time as a White House intern. She was one of that all-white intern class there in the Trump regime, putting the white back in the White House. Yes. the owner of the condo is, or co-owner of the condo, is a woman named Vicky Hart. She's a healthcare lobbyist. Her husband, Stephen Hart, is the chairman and CEO of Williams and Jensen PLLC. They're a lobby group. And let's see, who do they lobby for? Well, goodness me, they're, let's see, clients ExxonMobil, Oklahoma Gas and Electric. Well, if he lobbies for Oklahoma Gas and Electric, one may presume he probably knew, he and Scott Pruitt probably go way back. Because remember, of course, Pruitt was the Oklahoma Attorney General. Then there's Chenier Energy. They're a liquefied natural gas export terminal developer. EPA would have some business there. I mean, okay, so it's $6,100. Big deal, right? Well, yeah. There was the tens of thousands of dollars for Pruitt's soundproof phone booth. His insistence on flying first class because he's afraid someone might say something he doesn't like to him, such as, you know, you're trying to destroy the planet. Right. Well, the Code of Federal Regulations, 5 CFR 2635.202, speaks to this particular situation. Yeah. He paid below market rent, and he only paid on the nights when he stayed there. Writing on Twitter, Norm Eisen says, Trump administration officials have broken so many laws, they're more like a RICO conspiracy. Now remember, this is the guy who might conceivably have his eyes on what? Yes, the Attorney General's job, now that it looks like Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is trying to get himself fired so that Rosenstein can be fired, so that Mueller can be fired. But in the meantime, you know, Sessions also is a little bit loath to leave the position, one would presume, because, after all, he's under investigation by Mueller, too. And he can at least claim, he can try to exercise a little bit of damage control through being Attorney General of the United States of America. So that's thing one. Scott Pruitt, dodgy rentals from a lobbyist. Okay, we've got that part. All right. Then there's this. I presume you probably know that the EPA has announced a rollback of emissions standards for automobiles. Mm-hmm. And that's a giant leap backwards. Because we've seen that it's only when you force the auto industry to move into the future that they willingly do so. And after all, one presumes, I guess, that Scott Pruitt and the geezer Discustus have decided that the air in the United States of America is probably too clean for our own good. Remember when that maggot, that maggot professor, whatever type person, said that? He was an appointee, wasn't he? I can't remember who it was. An appointee, a Trump administration appointee. Said that our air may be too clean. Well, won't be for long after this. So those standards got rolled back, and there's more yet to be done. The fuel economy rules mandating the manufacture of cleaner, lower emission cars and SUVs. I mean, that's a done deal. That's in the works. That's going to happen. But then there was the statement released by Scott Pruitt. You know, today. That included this phrase. Cooperative federalism doesn't mean that one state can dictate standards for the rest of the country. EPA will set a national standard for greenhouse gas emissions that allows auto manufacturers to make cars that people both want and can afford, while still expanding environmental and safety benefits of newer cars. It's in everyone's best interest to have a national standard, and we look forward to working with all states, including California, as we work to finalize the standard. What does that mean? Well, for decades, California has regulated its own air quality because of the recognition that California has and has had particularly unique air quality issues, not shared by other states. And so California, in a desperate attempt to clean up filthy, filthy air, especially in Southern California, enacted stricter standards than those established by the federal government for the rest of the country. And those standards did a pretty good job of turning around a really, really horrible air quality situation, again, particularly in the L.A. area, so that L.A. doesn't look like Beijing, doesn't look like Mexico City, doesn't look like ever so many smog-choked cities around the planet. In fact, I was reading an article the other day. Guess what the dirtiest... Oh, there we go. Yes. Silent R. Lamar pointing out the Los Angeles Basin. A soup bowl. Mm-hmm. Where the soup is, you know, toxic. But the dirtiest air of any city on planet Earth, guesses? I mean, I just named two likely suspects, Mexico City and Beijing. But no. The dirtiest air on planet Earth is in Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia. Gets cold in Ulaanbaatar in winter. It's not exactly there's a few hot weeks in summer, but no. And because of the lack of infrastructure, people in Ulaanbaatar, among other things, burn coal, raw coal, when I read the story, it's like, oh, I know what they mean by that. Because, for instance, last night, my neighbors here fired up their coal-fired, coal-burning heat furnace thingy, and a miasmic choking cloud of greasy, yellow-blue, oily smoke rapidly enveloped the fabulous Kincaid Mansion here. Mm-hmm. But the dirtiest air on Earth is in Ulaanbaatar, and coal has a big part to play in that. So it is legal. The federal government, it's constitutional for the federal government to delegate its authority, especially via the EPA, for enforcement of, say, the Clean Air Act, and let standards be set by states based upon their own particular and individualized needs. And this system has worked for a very long time and been effective. Yeah, Sparky, for instance, tells me that you still have to get a smog check on your car every 2 years in California. Now, that may be going the way of the dodo. Because, you see, Donald Trump has lots of reasons to hate California. They're not participating, or they're showing an unwillingness to participate in his racist, xenophobic, downright fascist attempt to hound undocumented immigrants either into their graves or out of this country, and thereby, of course, do significant harm to the economy of this country. And, you know, California did not vote even significantly for Donald Trump in the 2016 election. And California has a functioning, semi-liberal, somewhat progressive state government, although I'm sure not nearly progressive enough, that disproves everything that wingnuts hold dear about government. Sparky tells me the smog check industry is big bucks in California. And of course, I presume that being able to breathe is a pretty big thing too. And that was definitely not the case a few decades back, especially in Southern California. That's a great idea. Silent R. Lamar, subject line, bad neighbor, says maybe we should, in the Horn family, get one of those Hollywood movie set hurricane fans to blow my neighbor's smoke back at him. That would be funny. That would be funny. Of course, I don't, you know, does it work well in the out in the open? No, no. But anyway, California has the right to set its own emissions and fuel economy standards. But particularly emissions. And now, in order to punish California for not getting on its knees and bowing and scraping before geezer disgust us, the EPA may very well try to take away California's ability to make its air breathable by the people who live there. And we really are, this is really infuriating. Because it's being done under the notion that we need some sort of national standard that's one size fits all for everywhere in the country. I mean, you kind of look at that and go, well, it kind of makes sense, until you realize that the standard will not meet California's needs. California, whose population is still growing. More cars getting onto the highways, et cetera, et cetera. Funny thing is, here in West Virginia, for instance, the EPA has long ago delegated to the state the ability to maintain, say, water quality standards under the Clean Water Act to the West Virginia EPA, WVDEP, Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection. And a few years ago, a number of groups, Coal River Mountain Watch participating, presented a petition to the EPA to revoke West Virginia's ability, this was during the Obama administration, to revoke the WVDEP's ability to just turn a blind eye to whatever it is a coal company wants to do to the waters of the state. It didn't go anywhere. This, however, will move like through a goose. And one of the other things it has to do with is the fact that last year, the California legislature passed a law that would limit the federal government's ability to sell public lands to private interests by giving the state of California the right of first refusal to purchase that land if that land is within the territorial borders of the state of California. Meanwhile, the Justice Department is suing, trying to get that law overturned. Jerry Brown, meanwhile, has declared that the assault on California's ability to have clean air is a belated April Fool's Day trick. He went on and said, "This cynical and meretricious abuse of power will poison our air and jeopardize the health of all Americans." What's at the heart of this? Among other things, the determination by Scott Pruitt to abandon the requirement that vehicles operating in America have an average fuel economy of 55 miles per gallon by 7 years from now, 2025. They're going to put another standard up, but they don't really know what that standard's going to be. It's just going to be a lot weaker. Yeah, who knows? Maybe an average of 23 miles a gallon. Hoo-wee, then we can get some real gas guzzlers back on the road. Further pissing off the Trump regime is the fact that with the standards that California promulgated, 12 other states adopted them as well. Because when the Clean Air Act was passed, part and parcel of it was a recognition that California should be able to set its own standards and make them more stringent because of the gravity of the threat and the harm. California Attorney General Javier Becerra said, "We're ready to file suit if needed to protect these critical standards and to fight the administration's war on our environment. California didn't become the sixth largest economy in the world by spectating." Ooh. Now the question is, how's that going to play when it ultimately gets to the Supreme Court of the United States? Because that's where it'll wind up. It'll wind up in front of Roberts and Alito and Thomas, that Kennedy guy, and Ann's boy Neil, who is such a reactionary right-wing fascist, Gorsuch is, that he makes fat dead Tony Scalia look like Earl freaking Warren. So whatever happens, it will be tied up in court for a very long time. But it still marks a dangerous attempt. To make the world a little, and particularly California, a little bit more toxic place to live. Matt in San Francisco writes in, just when you think, subject line, go figure, just when you think you can't possibly hate someone more than you already do, they come along with this crap. My latest thought experiment is imagining a Democratic takeover of the House, begin impeachment proceedings, both Trump and Pence are taken down, and suddenly we have the first woman president, Nancy Pelosi. Then I imagine all the Trumpers just going absolutely crazy. Hey, a guy can still dream. Oh, if this was a little closer to the top of the hour, I'd bump out with Dream On and it would be perfect. Thanks, Matt. Thank you. Note coming in from Elbert in Rhode Island. Bob, what would happen if gun humpers had to serve in the National Guard if they wanted to own an assault rifle? You would see a lot less assault rifles and not a whole lot of gun humpers in the National Guard, my guess. It's a great anagram, Scott and Punky. I imagine this was one that Punky thought up. But I won't use that word on the air. It's not worth getting the hate mail. Anagram of the day, Ann Coulter. Real beep. No. You can probably sort out what that word was. Yeah. So, like I said, Morians. We've got a lot of them. Now, I mentioned Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, of course, the Attorney General of the United States of America. Well, there's some new Sessions news out in the stream of consciousness this afternoon. Remember George Papadopoulos, who has pled guilty as part of the Mueller investigation, who was just some guy that nobody'd ever heard of, except for the fact that he was shown in a photograph participating in a high-level campaign meeting. Right, yeah. And remember how it wasn't so much the Steele dossier as it was George Papadopoulos getting filthy, shit-faced drunk in a London bar and spilling his guts to an Australian diplomat about the fact that the sweet, lovable, cuddly Russians apparently had developed a whale of a file on Hillary Clinton. Yeah, that was when the Australian diplomat, being a decent human being, told counterparts in the U.S. about it, and the FBI then started investigating Trump and his connection to Russia. Well, it has apparently happened again. George Papadopoulos is reported to have probably gotten shit-faced, fallen down drunk again, and started running his yap in a nightclub in Chicago last Thursday night. Really? Drinking hard on a Thursday, are you, George? It's that whole Friday begins on Thursday college boy thing? Is that what it is? Well, he made a new friend, George did, while he was getting fallen down, commode hugging drunk in Chicago. And now the new friend is reporting what George Papadopoulos was running his mouth about. interviewed by Think Progress, a guy named Jason Wilson, who is a computer engineer living in the Chicago area, said that he just had some, you know, talking over drinking with George Papadopoulos, who can't seem to keep his mouth shut when the booze is flowing. And that this is kind of a big deal. It all went down about 11 o'clock last Thursday night at a club called Hydrate, which is a joint in somewhere in Chicago. Papadopoulos and his wife, Simona Mangiante, were there. And he recognized the couple, introduced himself to them. And George and Simona were throwing back vodkas. And Jason Wilson describes them as extremely friendly and a bit flattered that Jason Wilson had recognized them. So, just as these things happen when the booze is flowing, at first they talked a little bit about Chicago. Hello, Chicago! You know, gosh, this place sure is windy. Goodness me. It's March, and it feels like it's January, and, you know, kind of Chicago-y conversation. But a little into the conversation, after they'd gotten real chummy and friendly-like, Jason Wilson said, so am I going to be disappointed when all the facts come out about the Russia investigation? And George, who is apparently cooperating with Mueller now because of the plea deal, said, oh no, it's just getting started. And went on to describe to Jason Wilson, according to the Think Progress article, that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions, far from pushing back hard, again, as he claimed, against Papadopoulos' idea for setting up a back-channel relationship for conversations with the Russians, know that, in fact, Sessions pushed him hard. Sessions encouraged me to find out anything he could about Hillary's emails that had been hacked by Russia and which had been mentioned by Joseph Mifsud, the Maltese academic professor type who had the Russian connections and initially told Papadopoulos about them. In other words, the Senate, you know, confirmation hearings weren't the only time that Sessions has been lying about the whole Russia thing. Yeah. No kidding. When she was interviewed by ABC back in December, Simona Mangiante said that Papadopoulos was constantly in touch with high-level officials in the campaign. And when she was interviewed by Think Progress on Friday, Simona Mangiante said that one of those high-level officials was, in fact, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, and that he talked with George. And then she sort of dried up. Okay, Arthur, that's worth a jingle. Hydrate. The bar's original name, Divulge, made people uncomfortable. Well, yes, you can see how it might. On Sunday, Simona Mangiante talked with Think Progress again. And, yeah, she admitted the conversation with Wilson. She said, oh, but he wouldn't have discussed his interactions with Sessions because he's not allowed to discuss the details of the case. So the interviewer asked her, so is it Wilson's account that isn't true? Or is it the story about Sessions telling Papadopoulos to press for information from Mifsud that isn't true? The answer? No comment. Then she called Think Progress back later on Sunday and said she talked to George about it, and George said he didn't share any new details about the case with Jason Wilson. Those things also never happened, she said. But she did acknowledge that there was talk about the Russia investigation during the course of the conversation. This is not going to make Robert Mueller happy. And when Robert Mueller has you in his hip pocket and becomes unhappy, life can become very unhappy for you. Meanwhile, attempting damage control, apparently Simona Mangiante does all the heavy lifting here. And she tweeted to Jason Wilson Sunday evening. This is like a spy novel, isn't it? And she said, "Hi, Jason. Hope you're well and you spent a nice Easter. Judd Legum contacted me." He's the guy from Think Progress. "And asked me to confirm something that you reported to him about the investigation. The info you provided isn't true, and we fortunately had the chance to clarify it. ... It must have been certainly a misunderstanding! ! Anyway, there's nothing George could reveal about the investigation apart from commenting what is already public. All the best, Simona!" But the damage is already done. Because over a year ago, in January 2017, when Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III had his confirmation hearings, he testified under, a pretty withering cross-examination from Al Franken, who will no longer be offering up any withering conversations when we could really freaking use some. He said, I didn't know nobody on the campaign would had any contact with Russians. Certainly not me. And that's when Al Franken brought out the meetings with Kislyak at the Republican National Convention. And he said, I wasn't meeting with him as a part of the Trump campaign. I was meeting with him because I'm a new United States Senator on the Foreign Relations Committee. And of course, everybody compartmentalizes their lives like that, right? Now let me take my Trump my maggot hat off and put on my Foreign Relations hat. There. Now anything I learn, I will forget when I put my maggot hat back on. Yes. And then, of course, turns out there was another campaign meeting, the one with Papadopoulos, and like I said, he said he did. I didn't mention that campaign meeting with Papadopoulos when I said I'd never met the young man, because I had my maggot hat on. And not my senating hat. And I done forgot it. But now my recollection has been refreshed. Hooey! I feel so refreshed. And now that my recollection is refreshed, To the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter. This, of course, has been refuted by three different people who were aware of the situation. It's been refuted by people who refuted it to Robert Mueller. They note at Think Progress, Judd Legum Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions Attorney General Office has declined to comment. And, you know, I mean, this stuff really happened because there's a photograph of George and Simona and Jason. That just conveniently has, it's a selfie, and it just conveniently has the address of the Hydrate Bar, 3458 North Halstead Street, right in the background, plain as day. I'm sure that was just an accident. Never mind the fact that it provides context to the and verifies the existence of the little chit chat. At the mention of the name of Steve of Al Franken, Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, says, "I was going to just mention this. Notice how we haven't seen anything in the news since Senator Franken left about." Hard-charging questioning anyone in that committee. Wonder why that is. Don't you just. So the Hydrate Bar in Chicago. Oh, at the risk of losing everybody by singing, I could, I can almost feel a song parody coming on. Thursday night in the bar, it definitely weren't the 4th of July. Right. Yeah. No singing, Bob. So here we are at the close of the filibobster, and thus being the close of the first hour of the program. And thanks go out to Charlene for jumping in. We now have $140 to go to meet the fundraising goal, the matching challenge for Shirley's Memorial Challenge. We got $140 to go in that and about an hour to do it in. So if you'd like to help out and get us down the road toward taking care of both this week and next week, because that's really kind of got to happen, well, it would be much appreciated, because it sucks, you know, worrying your brains out with something like that, with traveling coming up. Meanwhile, from Steve in New York, Senator Franken in radio DJ voice, I'd like to give a big shout-out to Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Hey, is that a shiv in my back, or are you just unhappy to see me? Yeah, no kidding. So, want to engage in any conversation? You're welcome to. The number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178, toll-free if you need us to pick up the cost of the call, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and, of course, from anywhere on planet Earth, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Remember, we've only got another hour of programming because all the programs this week are 2 hours, not three. What with me filling in for the vacationing, Mike Malloy. Happy to do it, dear friends. So, yeah, we'll take a break, see if y'all want to talk or if I need to just fill a Bobster for another couple for another hour or so. In the meantime, let's see, it's like 3 minutes and 55 seconds. And I reckon we could knock out $140 in 355 so that I could not have to talk about fundraising for the next hour. That would devoutly to be wished. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Now just imagine it's Thursday, and it's Thursday night in a bar, not in a park, and you've probably got the whole Papadopoulos song parody right there, ready to roll. So it's 5 minutes past the hour. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Glenn in upstate New York. We're now down to $130 to go for fundraising to finish off the evening. Thank you very kindly indeed, Glenn. Thank you very, very much. Let's see. Where to go? Yeah, me too. Flavio says, I adore that song. My absolute favorite Chicago song. I don't know. I'm kind of a 25 or 6 to 4 guy when it comes to favorite Chicago tunes, but yeah. And I lose all interest in Chicago pretty much post Terry Kath. Or what the rise of the Peter Cetera era or whatnot. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Well, let's get our daily dose of Weird Donald out of the way, shall we? I hope everybody had a good holiday weekend. The pagans celebrating Aostra, the Christians celebrating Easter. Well, you know, the Roman Catholic and Protestant Christians, the Greek Orthodox won't celebrate Easter for a while. Just one of those little byproducts of the Great Schism. And something over which, you know, Christians have killed each other in the past. Religion of peace and everything. Donnie Dimwit, of course, spent another weekend on our dime at Mar-a-Lago. And came back in time for some Easter festivities of, the annual White House Easter egg roll. The Easter Bunny was there. We don't know if Sean Spicer was in the suit or not. Sean's a bit of a furry. He likes that kind of thing. And Trump talked to the children who were there for the Easter egg roll. And, well, it's just freaking weird, let's put it that way. I mean, really freaking weird. And we'll probably hear it here in a minute, but sometimes the magic works. And sometimes it's just strange. So let's see if we can get it again. Oh, come on. You know, you cue these things up and they don't stay queued up. Oh, this is really one I wanted to play, damn it. Here we go.
Credible house or building or whatever.
No, we want all of this.
Everybody to keep this incredible house or building or whatever you want to call it, because there really is no name for it. It is special. And we keep it in tip-top shape.
Just in case you're wondering, this house, this building, or whatever you call it, he's talking about the White House. He's not talking about that disgusting pile of bricks down in Florida. He's talking about the White House. This house or building or whatever you want to call it, because there's no name for it. You know, except for the fact that its name is the White House, kind of goes back. It wasn't always white. It goes back to when we pissed off the Canadians, and on behalf of His Majesty's government, they took a little walk down this way and set fire to Washington D.C. And when the smoke cleared and the fires had died down, the country was so broke, there was nothing but basically whitewash with which to paint the building. Instead of its previous, I think, sort of eggshell yellow color. And so white it became, and white it has remained, and that became its name, the White House. Or whatever you want to call it, if you're Geezer Disgustus and the Spyro Keats are singing arias each to each.
We call it sometimes tippy-top shape, and it's a great, great place. It's an honor to have everybody on.
Tippy-tip-top shape. You know, it's funny. The furry that's standing to his left, right as you're looking at the photo, has this look of permanent amazement on its face. Just, what? And it couldn't be more representative of the situation had it been an actual mobile face, you know, with, you know, twitches and ticks and, huh?
On behalf of the Trump family, many of whom are with us right here in the audience, I just want to thank you. This is a special year. Our country is doing great. You look at the economy, you look at what's happening. Nothing's ever easy, but we have never had an economy like we have right now.
No, we haven't. In point of fact, as he has told us, he is personally responsible for the stock market. Well, the stock market hemorrhaged another 458.92 points today, the Dow Jones did. NASDAQ was down 193. S&P 500 was off 58.9. Nasty. Really. 23,644.19, down 458.92. Pretty much erasing most of those allegedly spectacular gains. Largely on fears that a trade war is going to break out and it's going to mean terrible things for the American economy, you know, which it will. Well, precisely my point, Ron, in the what appears to be muddy north, Ron noting, hey, I can see muddy ground. We have a forecast of snow mixed with rain for tomorrow. Woohoo, spring! Yeah. As Ron points out, the White House wasn't so white after it was burned by those invaders from Canada in, you know, 1814. Well, right. It took a lot to scrub off all the charcoal and, you know, smoke damage, and then all they could, like I said, all they had was whitewash. No, you know, there was no real paint store in D.C. in 1814. Yeah, subject line coming from Steve in New York. The building which has no name. I live in a house that... No, never mind. When are we going to hear that he came up with a name? Simple and clean. The White House. The Saffron Stalin is so... creative. P.S. Did you know that submarines work under the water? I know, and yes, Jack in Shreveport reminding us, didn't he call the White House a dump one time? Yes, he did. And at this point in time, it probably is. Because there's a dump living in it. A dump in a dump. But the economy's going so amazingly, he tells little children who are out to roll Easter eggs on the White House lawn, because you know what little kids need today and don't get enough of? Pompous lectures on a bogus economy. That's what they don't get enough of.
And we're going to make it bigger and better and stronger. Our military is now at a level, will soon be at a level that it's never been before. It's you see what's happening, and you see what's happening with funding. The funding of our military was so important. And so many military people are with us today. So just think of $700 billion, because that's all going into our military this year. So I want to thank you all for being here. The band, unbelievable. I love
The band is named Unbelievable. The band Unbelievable. The band Perry. I mean, what? Oh, God, the stupid. He's not even remotely home. Who goes off on a military rant to a bunch of children? Well, obviously Trump does, but you get my point? And I want you to remember that number, 700 billion, because that's what's going on into our great military. Wasn't it last week that he was talking about, or maybe the week before, it all runs together, that he was talking about wanting to raid the Pentagon budget to build his stupid freaking wall? Yes, as a matter of fact, it was. So, you know, ready, set, roll, right?
Of you people, I hear them a lot. They're as talented as anybody and any players anywhere. So thank you very much. And now I'm going to come down and we're going to watch this roll. Thank you all and have a great time.
Now watch this drive. Now watch this Easter egg roll. Holy crap. That goes along with something that Agnes pointed out to me in the last 24 hours or so. Looking for it now. This one just kind of made me say, what? All I have to do is find it. Yeah, there it is. The Telegraph in the UK reporting, and, you know, you might want to get the hockey puck or sit down or something. Melania Trump runs White House from behind the scenes, new book claims. The new book is The Trump White House, Changing the Rules of the Game by one Ronald Kessler, who said melanoma has, quote, tremendous impact on policy and strategy, and that, in fact, it was melanoma who convinced him to run for president. She got him to run. He was pussyfooting around. Well, you know, that phrase may not even mean what it means to the rest of us where he's concerned. There may be, you know, toes involved. No telling. About running, and she said, you have to declare your candidacy, and that's what happened, and he went up in the polls, Mr. Kessler told CNN Sunday. Beyond that, she will disagree with him. She will sit in meetings with cabinet officers, and she will disagree with Trump. Her judgment is spectacular. Really? Is it her idea to make the air harder to breathe in California? Of course, if you're an undead immortal, that whole breathing thing doesn't much matter. I don't think people fully recognize how influential she is and what a grounded political sense she has on her own. She always seems to have the pulse on the right move and the right person at the right time. Really? Betsy DeVos? The right person? Ben freaking Carson? Right person? I realize dude's trying to sell a book. Based on hours of interviews with high-level West Wing staff and the president himself. Also reveals that Mr. Trump was regularly approached by eligible billionaires desperate to go on a date with Hope Hicks. Donald Trump has told friends that billionaires are constantly asking him to fix them up with Hicks, who is consumed by her work until recently was never seen with a date. Trump says he refuses. Huh. Well, I wonder why. You recall that he's been screaming for Hopi for a few weeks now, and she's gone, and he's not, you know, happy. Yeah, Arthur. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, kids, no collusion, no collusion. Now here's Ivanka. Isn't she? Yeah. Hmm. Although at the Easter egg roll, there was a rare Tiffany sighting. And little Baron was there as well. Mm-hmm. Ron, in Raleigh, with a question. A member of the duopoly of Ron. Subject line, Jesus! Are you as tired of this self-aggrandizing bastard as I am? He has the vocabulary of a 10-year-old. He's a better president than that Kenyan Muslim, you know. He's the most presidential president that America's ever presidented. God almighty. Interesting, this little book coming out from this Kessler fellow. That is his name, isn't it? Yeah. Former reporter for the Washington Post, Ronald Kessler. Meanwhile, he details the president's concerns with the roles of his daughter Ivanka and son-in-law Jared Kushner, who he described as Teflon aides because he believed Mr. Trump would never fire them, talking about, what Kessler has said. He wrote that the couple have been behind some of the worst decisions made by the administration and that they had no understanding of the basic fundamentals of politics. Well, how about that? Almost sounds like this is a desperate attempt to counterbalance some of the more lurid assertions in Fire and Fury, doesn't it? The book claims the pair, Javanka, pushed for the firing of James Comey, brought in special counsel Robert Mueller, and orchestrated the hiring of Anthony Scaramucci, who lasted less than 2 weeks as communications director. According to the author, after once watching Mr. Kushner on TV, Trump said, "Look at Jared. He looks like a little boy, like a child." Takes one to know one. Yeah. Meanwhile, in other White House news, this should be a real blast. Harriet Alexander reporting for the Telegraph that the Tangerine Tiberius has invited his boss, Vladimir Putin, to the White House to come and chum around for a little bit, see the secrets, see the big board, you know, that kind of thing. Yuri Ushakov, an aide to the Russian tyrant, told reporters today that during a phone conversation on March the 20th, would that be the one where he congratulated Putin for his dodgy electoral victory? Yeah, I think so. Trump suggested that the first meeting could be held in Washington between the two leaders. If everything goes well, I hope that the American side would not refuse its proposal to discuss the possibility of organizing the summit talks. And then Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, otherwise known as the Trunchable. Jesus, that woman. By the way, the portrait by Jim Carrey is just spot on. She issued a statement. As the president himself confirmed on March 20th, hours after his last call with President Putin, the two had discussed a bilateral meeting in the not-too-distant future at a number of potential venues, including the White House. We have nothing further to add at this here time.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. Yeah, meanwhile, Ron in the somewhat squishy north. Pointing out at the Easter egg roll, 400 kids saying, "What the f-? Just here for the fucking eggs, and my parents want me to be nice." And of course, there were signed gold Trump eggs for sale in the gift shop. Right, yeah. Lots of tweeting from Geezer Disgustus in the last couple of days. Oddly enough, while he said that he wants to screw the DACA kids into the ground, not a lot of talk about the markets. But the numbers, as I noted, have been consistently horrible. I'm not one of those stocks and economics guys, so, you know, I don't make any bones about that. But I have a question for the folks who fancy themselves in that line. Is this something we could, when the thing tanked a while back, this is a long overdue correction. That's necessary to have a healthy stock market. We just had a little correction here. Nothing to worry about. It's not like we're going to find ourselves tomorrow morning in some sort of free-falling bear market or anything. No, it's just a correction, Bill. That's all it is. Now back to Fred in the Weather Center. Is this still a correction? I mean, when you take into account the fact that, for instance, today's sell-off it rebounded a little bit, but at one point it was down 758 points in the afternoon. And when you consider that one of the things that the Washington Post reports, all three indices are negative for the year. The Dow and S&P 500 are in correction territory. A correction is generally considered a 10% drop from its peak. The price of gold and silver, both considered flights to safety, were up on Monday. Part of this has to do with the fact that, you know, in China they don't take Sunday off. And the Chinese government said yesterday that in retaliation for the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's levies on steel and aluminum, that China will impose tariffs on 128 U.S. commodities that it imports. Of those 128 commodities, that would be your pork, your soybeans, fruit, aircraft. And by the way, some indication in a report today that manufacturing is slowing. The Institute for Supply Management's Manufacturing Index and the Purchasing Managers Index for manufacturing both failed to meet expectations. That, in turn, made a bunch of Wall Streeters start hunkering like a dog trying to pass a peach pit. So, let's see. Who sucked today? Intel, Cisco, 3M, Nike, Microsoft, Home Depot, and Walmart. All just sucked today. Nike shed 3.5% of its value today. That had to do with in part with a story detailing what a rotten place Nike is to work. Intel took a crap because news came out that Apple plans to install its own chips in Macs as early as 2020. And then there's Elon Musk, whose April Fool's joke backfired badly. Yesterday, Musk joked that Tesla has gone completely and totally bankrupt. Tesla has lost 18% of its value over the last 5 days. So this is the Trump, at the very least, this is the Trump correction, if not the beginning of some sort of Trump auguring in of the market. Yeah. So we got about 29 minutes left in the program and $130 to go in fundraising to meet Shirley's Memorial Challenge. Please don't let this thing go by unmet. And that way, we've got a much better fighting chance of actually, you know, meeting the fundraising goal for the coming week. So, the PayPal button is over at headon.live. Okay. A couple of emails rolling in. Ron in Raleigh with a question. Has Dolt 45 had a damn thing to say about the gunning down of Stephon Clark? You know that Stephon was an incredible athlete, leaping backwards, attacking those cops with his combination cell phone and gun. Well, the only comment from the White House, Ron, was to say that it was a local matter that needs to be mattered locally. To local people in a local situation. It's local matter. Right. Okay, let's go over and check in with Scott and Punky, shall we? Hey, Scott.
Greetings from downtown Oz.
And hallucinations.
Yes. Where to begin? I was a little late to the proceedings today, so you may have already covered this, but you were talking about the possible diminution, I think is a word, of the air quality standards regulations.
Yes.
If Trump and... what's his name? Scott Pruitt, get their way. And I'm not sure where I know this from. I think it was from the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car back in the first decade of the 2000s. But it goes something like this. Whenever the more stringent California air quality regulations went into effect, if you watched any game shows back in that era, whenever they gave away a fabulous new car.
A new car!
Yeah. They would list all of the bells and whistles in said vehicle. And then before they quoted the actual retail price, they would include a phrase that was California emissions package.
Right.
And what that was, as I understand it, was because of the stringent air quality rules in California, the car companies had to produce vehicles that met those standards. Otherwise, they would miss out on selling millions upon millions of automobiles in the Golden State of California. Is that pretty much true?
I think you've got it.
Okay. So what the car industry apparently did was, rather than set up two assembly lines for one for California cars with the California emissions package and another assembly line for the other 49 states, they said, what the hell, we're tooled up for California. Let's produce the cars en masse, so to speak. So I don't, now, regardless of what they do, it would occur to me that the car companies will still have to meet the established rules in California, because states' rights means they can set their own regulations in terms of what their standards are. If you want to drive and sell a car in this state, it has to meet these requirements.
Right.
Or am I wrong?
Right, and as Sparky pointed out, every 2 years you've got to get an emissions test on your vehicle.
I remember those. I don't drive anymore, but I do remember those. So, I hesitate to even ask what are they up to, because I know damn well what they're up to. What they're up to is the rapid dismantling of every good thing that has come to pass in the last 75, 80 years, maybe even more. Okay? So I guess it's established what they're up to.
Well, this is just plain old-fashioned ugly vindictiveness.
And what was it that I was watching the other day? I think it was a YouTube video of a C-SPAN panel about Trump. The title was along the lines of Trump Knows Nothing, and it was at a book fair in Arizona, I guess it was. And one of the authors pointed out a guy whose name I had heard at one point but had forgotten about it. I believe his name was James Buchanan, and he hailed from the state of Virginia, my home state. And apparently in the 50s, or maybe even before, was almost single-handedly responsible for injecting these severe libertarian viewpoints into the body politic. And I think Hartman used to talk about this guy.
You're not talking about the former president.
No.
America's I'm only pretty, bachelor president.
He was from PA. Okay, but I'm talking about this guy, Buchanan, who apparently...
You're not talking about Pat Buchanan, are you?
No, it wasn't Pat Buchanan, and I wish I had made proper notes. I'm pretty sure it was James Buchanan, and I'm pretty sure he was from Virginia. But apparently, his writings were very influential in the lives of right-wing policymakers in the 70s and 80s, possibly the 60s too.
You got me at a loss.
All right, well, I'll find that video. I know you don't have a lot of time to watch stuff like that, but I'll at least send the I think they include the transcripts on the C-SPAN page, and I'll highlight the sections having to do with this guy, because if I'm remembering correctly, whoever the hell this guy was, you talk about turning points in history, the very fact that his mama and papa decided to bump uglies long, long ago, that resulted in his birth and growing up and ability to be positioned to be an influence peddler, that was a turning point in history, because apparently all else that has gone south, so to speak, can be traced back to the influence of this guy. I'm sure somebody in the Horn family has heard of this guy.
Yeah, so far I haven't got an email. Usually, something like that will pop up when the memory is tickled.
But anyway, the point of bringing him up had to do with the fact that when I talk about they, I'm talking about the virulent right wingers. Their sole intention is to rat fuck everybody except the rich.
Well, I mean, there's lots of rich people in California.
Oh yeah, you can say that again. That's your cue to say it again.
Lots of rich people in California. But no, this is vindictive politics at its very worst.
Yeah,
this is punishment for not going along with it. You know how we were there was supposed to be a Mexican summit with the Mexican president Peña Nieto. That fell apart when he refused to go along with Trump in saying that the wall had to be built, because he's not gonna be bullied.
Well, I think that fell apart rather early in the administration.
No, I mean like in the last couple of months.
Okay. Yeah. Man, yeah. Okay.
And it's the same sort of. Jerry Brown and the state of California generally refuse to go. Refuse to go along with the torture and torment of undocumented immigrants, and additionally the fact that, again, California. Generally speaking, I mean, there's maggots out there, but generally speaking, California is not a Trump-friendly place. And this is just pure vindictiveness.
Okay. While you were saying that, I thought to Google, this guy's name was James B. Buchanan.
Okay.
And I'm sending you a link to an Atlantic article that goes into his dirty deeds.
Okay.
So you can catch up on him that way and probably find other stuff besides. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but it was bugging me that we couldn't figure out who the hell the guy was, but...
Yeah, I understand completely. Okay, it's just landed. I'll have a look in my
But
downtown.
You're right. I mean, Jerry Brown and I believe the Attorney General were both on PBS NewsHour a couple of weeks ago when Trump was starting to foam at the mouth about California and Jerry Brown and immigrants and all that. And basically, Jerry Brown or the Attorney General basically said, look, you know, we have no problem with cooperating with the immigration authorities when it is called for and appropriate, but we're not going to have our local law enforcement and agencies do their job. And Trump, you know, has gone into throwing one of his many, many fits over... you know, the fact that people don't just automatically roll over because he decrees something. Again, because the guy hasn't the first clue as to how America's system of government is designed.
It's not just that he doesn't have a clue. He doesn't want one either.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters is making the government work the way he wants it to, which is, of course, a classic hallmark of a tyrant and a dictator.
Well, and I know that you always get on me about being the relentless optimist, but it bears repeating. If we can survive this Trump experience, this, as Jerry Ford referred to Watergate, at last our long national nightmare is over. If we can get to the point where somebody with more than a dozen viable brain cells to bang together can stand up and confidently speak in a loud, steady voice to the American people and the world, my fellow citizens, my fellow human beings, our long national nightmare is over. If some bright and shining, wonderful day, we can get to that point, perhaps there will be a silver lining. Perhaps it will be that Republicans in the presidency and leadership positions in the House and Senate will once again, as they did in the wake of Herbert Hoover, will go 20-some-odd years or more without being in any meaningful place of authority and influence. So maybe, you know, it's a stretch, but maybe if we survive it, there will be a bright, silver lining to this Trump nightmare. Because otherwise, it's just like wailing and gnashing of teeth in this lifetime, for those of us who still have teeth.
I have, again, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but what I see in terms of a trend over time is a devolution of government in which things don't get better, they get worse. It's almost like a thermodynamic process with government moving toward entropy.
Yeah, well, that's basically what that Buchanan guy was about. He didn't want government having what he considered to be undue influence in the daily lives of other human beings. He wanted the entropy to kick in with all deliberate speed, but not in the sense that the Supreme Court meant it in 54. Those bastards meant business. And by bastards meaning business, I mean the vast right-wing conspiracy. And don't kid yourself, boys and girls, there is a vast right-wing conspiracy. Because vast is...
And it's large... it's been going on pretty much since 1964.
Oh, before that, if I understand the timeline with this Buchanan guy, because when we talk about a vast right-wing conspiracy, well, let's define our terms. Vast would mean large number of people. Right-wing would be the polar opposite of left-wing. And conspiracy would be getting together at the club to discuss ways of implementing their thoughts and desires. Is that pretty much a good encapsulation of the term?
I think so. You're getting a little bit of pushback. Randy in PA says, Scott doesn't get it. People are drained and can't survive another Wall Street crash, and that is when the hammer will come down. And, well, I mean, that's how the Republicans operate. It took 8 years to kind of put the economy back together, and as soon as the Treasury fills back up, some Republicans come along and steal everything that isn't nailed to the floor.
Well, that is, after all, their modus operandi, to give welfare to the corporations and have the responsible parties, the Democrats and the rest of us, do the cleanup job and taking care of paying it all back.
With your optimistic hope that maybe this will lead to some sort of a backlash that makes the Republicans disappear for 20 or 30 years in the wilderness, yeah, that'd be great. But you got to get over the gerrymandering first. You've got to have a valid census for reapportionment second. And along the way, you also have to take into account that we've got Trump, and on any given night, you know, we're talking about what a godforsaken idiot he is. You know, mainly because he is one, all right? But the other part of that is, and this is the truly terrifying part, as far as I'm concerned, is that if he was even remotely competent, we would be so much worse off now that we can scarcely imagine it. All the stuff that we're afraid is going to happen would have happened by now if he was competent.
Yeah,
and there are people out there who fill that mold. People like Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who fancies himself another von Clausewitz on military matters because he served in Iraq and is as virulently a right-wing POS as exists in this country today. Somebody with a half a brain comes in under this, and I mean, that's all that saved us so far. We had 8 years of Bush. We may have 8 years of this guy. And it's only basic incompetence that has stood between the United States and its utter destruction.
Yeah, and I will agree with that. If the guy were really as competent as his press clippings indicate, more damage would have been done by now. And because he is incompetent, in a way, who was it? Wasn't it... who is that smarmy guy that talks about drowning government in the bathtub? Grover Norquist.
Right.
Didn't he say all we want is someone in there who will sign whatever we put before him?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's who Trump is. He is Governor Lepetitmain in Blazing Saddles.
Work. Hello, boys. Okay. You miss me?
Yeah.
So, damn thing's defective.
So, you know, that's Trump. Trump is the useful idiot behind the desk. And maybe, with any kind of luck, we can win both or one houses of Congress come November 2018. And at least throw a wrench into the right-wing mechanism for long enough to see us through to the next chance to get it right or wrong in a national presidential election. I mean, I've got no illusions about, you know, Republicans being cast off to wherever Napoleon went when he was cast off forever and ever or close to it. I have no illusions about that. I truly, truly don't. But at least we can get our fucking heads together to the point that we can, you know, see, as that notable political philosopher Red Fox once said, when you see the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet, okay? And I really do think in my heart of hearts that the Republicans know there are way more of us than there are of them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be trying to employ such desperate methods and want to rush everything through secretly, okay? So they apparently are running scared. What's that old saying? If you're going to run, either run scared or unopposed.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, there's only two ways to run an election, scared to death and unopposed.
Yeah, so it just stands to reason that on some level, they are fully aware that their time is short. Because none of this happens in a vacuum. To the extent that anybody's paying any attention and letting others know what's going on, as you do on this show, and as the listeners do with their calls and email contributions, to that extent, we are at least engaged enough to keep the conversation going and hopefully tap enough people on enough shoulders and get them similarly engaged so that we can forestall some of this bad shit that would otherwise be inevitable. And you know, like I say, if that makes me a cockeyed optimist, you know, that's what I am.
Well, I believe me, I would prefer for your cockeyed optimism to come to fruition rather than my grim, dark, more than a little bit terrifying notions that I have.
Well, and I've always appreciated that outlook, Bob, and that honesty, because you do keep us aware of what the hell is going on. You do not sugarcoat this stuff. And you've challenged me just in the years that I've been listening. I guess it's been a couple of years now, to, you know, not merrily skip down the path, you know, in my frilly Easter dress, but to really even challenge my own assumptions and beliefs. And believe it or not, I have. I mean, because you do make points that engage me toward further inquiry and examination. And that's important. That's vitally important. And I would hope some of the sparkle fart ponies will examine their consciences and their facts and their reality and shake off whatever happened in 2016 and join the rest of us, because there is work to do.
Well, there is, and I guess we'll find out through the progress of the primary season, and then find out in November whether people want to do that work.
I sincerely hope we're up for it. Because as bad as anything has happened thus far or in the past, it will be so ever so much worse if we don't succeed. It's not going to be pretty.
Well, no, it's not. I think, you know, dystopian and terrifying are two words that come immediately to mind.
Yes,
but
unfortunately.
At any rate, I got to get out of here because I got to shut down and retool here.
Okay, Bob.
But have yourself a good evening, and my regards to Punky.
Okay, read that article about Buchanan, and if I can find that C-SPAN conversation, they explain it quite well, and it's worth at least reading the transcript.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott. Take care.
All right, take care, Bob.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott and Punky out in San Diego. It is time. It's time to get out of here. We will close the program, hoping that we will raise $130 between now and tomorrow, so that Charlie's challenge can be met. Thank you very kindly. And that way, we'll only have a regular this week a $400 fundraising goal tomorrow evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for sharing your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thanks to all of you who keep this program on the air. And therefore, it's not like there'd be ads if you didn't. There just wouldn't be a program. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. By the way, a reminder, if you're going to listen to the Malloy program, please listen at Progressive Voices. Because, you know, there won't be any. I looked at doing video, it turned out to be impossible. So listen via Progressive Voices, not via the Horn Stream. Because that's beneficial to our friends Mike and Kathy and the whole PV crew. I'll be back in about an hour over on Progressive Voices. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Later.